to ask you what the most famous passage in the Old Testament was that just about everybody, even those who don't go to church very often, could probably quote at least some of. What would you say it is? The 23rd Psalm, right? Turn with me if you and read with me there in the 23rd Psalm. If you go to most funerals, some weddings, I don't know how that fits in, but yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, not typically language you see in a wedding ceremony. I have a light? Oh, that big switch. Now y'all can see me better, doesn't it? Doesn't that fix it? In the 23rd Psalm, there is this very famous passage, and it reads thus, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." When we read a passage like that and we see the term or the phrase, "The Lord is my shepherd," and we see the image of a shepherd, what goes through your mind? I would argue that for a lot of people, and maybe you and sometimes even me, we imagine this very beautiful, bucolic place, maybe in the Swiss Alps, or maybe in the beautiful pastures of California, where it's beautiful and there's lots of water and the grass is green and it's 78 degrees outside and there are these real fluffy, cute little sheep and they're all sitting out there grazing quietly and it's peaceful when we think about shepherds and sheep. The reality is that shepherding and sheep are a very different world most of the time. In fact, the image of sheep and shepherding that those that read in the Old Testament or even the New Testament that we'll look at more in just a second, the image of shepherding was one of a life of difficulty and a life fraught with danger. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, David in verses 34 through 36 describes, as he's going out to battle with Goliath on the battlefield, he describes to the king Saul, and he says, "When I was a boy, I went out and I fought lions and bears and all kinds of animals to protect the sheep. I'm a shepherd. That's what I do." In other words, he equates the going to battle with the Philistine as somewhat similar to his time guarding sheep. That's how he sees being a shepherd. And so when we see this, I want to spend a little bit of time this morning maybe challenging the image you have in your mind of Jesus when he says, "I am the good shepherd." I want to maybe challenge that a little bit and see if we can get into a little bit more depth about what he really means when he says, "I am your shepherd. I am the good shepherd." So we're going to go and spend most of our time here in John chapter 10. Jesus uses several in the book of John. We'll look at one, a couple of them actually, one in passing and one in more detail. Several of these statements in the book of that John records, and these are the I am statements. And what these serve to do is to show us or draw for us an image of what Jesus is really like. You see, it's really easy for us to imagine in our minds what Jesus is like and what he would be like to talk to or to be around or how our relationship is with him. If you have a good friend in this world, when you think about that friend, you can draw in your mind what it's like to discuss. You say, "Oh, that's just normal him. That's just I'm used to hearing him talk like that," or "I'm used to hearing her discuss things in from this viewpoint. I know what they're going to say." Jesus uses these "I am" statements in helping those that he's talking to in this earth understand who he is and why he's here, and he uses this statement, "The good shepherd," here in John chapter 10, and we're going to look at the context around it. And I want you to see here that Jesus, as he describes a shepherd, it's not necessarily in the context of this very calm and comforting and serene way. The way that he describes the life of a shepherd and him as that shepherd is a life of danger. It's a life of sacrifice. It's a life of struggle. And we'll see that as we go throughout our time here today. First of all, let's begin by reading there in verse 1. This is John chapter 10 in verse 1. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the sheepfold, enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens, the sheep hear his voice, and he calls out his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he has brought them out, all out his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. Jesus talks about the idea of sheep as something that are in danger of being led astray. He describes them as those who are kept carefully, and there's a door, and we'll see that in just a second. But they have to be protected, if you will. In this description of himself as the good shepherd, and in this illustration of him as the gate or the door, Jesus describes himself really in comparison to three different other entities. First of all, he describes himself as different from the robber, the thief. He describes himself as different from the hired hand or the hireling. And he describes himself in the context as a servant of his father. We'll see all three of those. But he begins by discussing this idea of sheep being in this area, and they are vulnerable to being broken into, and one that goes and leads them astray, but they know the shepherd, and they'll only follow the shepherd. And Jesus uses this to, I believe, describe the idea of this thief. And he goes on a little bit more. In verse 70, Jesus said to them, they didn't understand him the first time, so he says to them again, by the way, it's good Jesus is patient and explains things more than once. Some of us need that more than others. He says, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved. He will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. You see, when a thief steals something, a thief doesn't steal something for the benefit of what he's stealing. I watched I have this weird thing. I like watching car chases on YouTube. You ever do that? You ever watch that? There's a reason that there's a phrase that goes like this: drive it like you stole it, right? You ever watch somebody who has stolen a car and then is running from the police? Are they careful with it? No. Anybody who's ever rented a car knows this, right? Don't drive rental cars that way. But you see, they have something that they've stolen, and whereas I may be very careful with the vehicles I own because I have to fix it if it breaks, and I have a concern for it, I own it, I'm careful to change the oil when it's supposed to be done and do other maintenance and things like that, or if there's a noise, it bothers me because I'm concerned about it. Well, the thief doesn't do that. You see, the thief doesn't think about the well-being of what he's stealing. He's simply doing it for his own benefit, for his own desires, for his own gain, if you will. And that's exactly how Jesus describes himself as not being. The thief only steals for his own benefit. But in fact, Jesus says, I'm the shepherd. I'm only here for the benefit of the sheep. You see, the shepherd is not there for the shepherd. You see, if there's no sheep there, the shepherd has no reason to be. He has no reason to wander out into the wilderness and sleep out under the stars, to guard nothing. The sheep are there and the shepherd is there for their own benefit. Look with me, if you would, at 2 Peter chapter 2. Let's skip over there for just a second. 2 Peter chapter 2. And Jesus discusses, and he says, those who have come before me. He uses that phrase. You see, there are all manner of people who will live in this life and will exist in this life to get something from you. 2 Peter chapter 2. 2nd, I'm in 1st Peter. That's why it doesn't match. 2nd Peter chapter 2. You see, most people that, or I shouldn't say most, a lot of people that will come into a religious context, lot of times they'll come into it to get something, to have people give them something for the benefit of it. There's a thing on Instagram. You see, I'm on Instagram, young folks. I'm cool. And it's called preacher sneakers. Okay? And the whole idea behind this is that they take pictures of different ministers wearing very expensive tennis shoes as they're up teaching. And the whole point is to kind of make fun of them, that they're here they are teaching about humility and service, and they're wearing $1,000 pair of tennis shoes. And it's pretty funny. You should look at it. I get a kick out of it. But you see, there are those who in this life will seek to share message in order to benefit them. A thief. Stealing, taking, if you will, from those who have to enrich themselves. You see, this isn't anything new. 2 Peter chapter 2. 2 Peter chapter 2 in verse 3. Describes, and in their greed they will exploit you with false words. Their condemnation from long ago is not idle, and their destruction is not asleep. He describes false teachers there, those that will try and will do what they do for the benefit of themselves and not for the benefit of those that hear them. That's a thief. And Jesus says, that's not me. I'm not like that. Jesus didn't go and do what he did in order to benefit himself. We'll see that in just a second. He didn't do that to benefit his Father. He did it to benefit us. You see, Jesus would have been perfectly fine continuing to live in heaven, never having walked this earth and been in poverty and been in struggle and been in ridicule and hung on a cross and died. He was just fine. He did it for us. He did it because his Father asked him to, but he did it for us. He's not like the thief. Let's keep reading there in John chapter 10. Let's keep reading there. In verse 11, he says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Now, he says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. So if you'll imagine that bucolic over in Switzerland. I don't know why I think Switzerland's pretty. I've never been there, but I'm told it's pretty. And they're up in these mountains, and kind of a little Bo Peep kind of image. Does that square with what he's talking about here, laying down his life? No, it's very different. The idea of a shepherd is a dangerous existence. We already talked a little bit about, from 1 Samuel 17, David's experiences out in the wilderness. And if you'll imagine, the life of a shepherd, the life of the shepherd is something like this. He would go out and he would take his sheep out into an area where they could eat. And if you know anything about sheep, you know they do two things. They eat a lot and they're dumb, okay? And as they would eat an area, they would eat all the food that's in a particular area, and then they would need to do what? They need to go a little bit further out, a little bit further down the road to go find another pasture. And if you'll imagine in an area that's kind of arid and difficult, there's not a tremendous amount of vegetation there, it may mean that that shepherd has to go a long ways away from civilization with his sheep in order to make sure that they have what they need. And as you get further and further out, not only are you a shepherd that's far out of there, you're standing there in the middle of a group of things that are edible to the wild animals that are around them. You are standing there dangling a piece of meat around your neck in bear country. As a shepherd. And so here you are. You're going in and you're doing this. And Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. Sometimes we think of good shepherd. We read that. We think, good shepherd. Oh, he's good. He's righteous. I don't know that that's necessarily what the good there means. To me, the idea is he's a good shepherd. He knows what he's doing. He's exactly capable of doing what he's supposed to do. He's good at his job of being shepherd. And we see that I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for he lays down his life for the sheep. And to illustrate this point, he describes it this way. He draws a comparison between himself as the good shepherd and someone who is hired. Verse 12, he who is hired, a hired hand or a hireling, your version may say, and not a shepherd who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. You see, to a shepherd, to the owner of those sheep, it's very personal. It's very important. The existence of that flock means much more to them than somebody who's just hired to take care of them. You see, in that world, in that time, having sheep, and that's why you look at the Old Testament and you see that a man's wealth was described as being so much livestock or so many herds or whatever it may be, is because those sheep, to the owner of the sheep, those sheep were livelihood. They were what a shepherd depended upon to have food to eat for his family. That's what he did to survive. They didn't sheep or shepherd because it was fun to do. You know, in Texas we have those kind of weekend ranchers, right? They have a normal job in town, and then they go out on the week, and they put on some boots, and they drive around an old beat-up truck or a four-wheeler, and they raise some cattle, and that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. It's fun stuff. But their livelihood doesn't depend on those animals. In this case, the shepherds does. And so he sees them as extremely valuable. It's a sense of ownership. He is the one who, if the sheep are lost, he is the one who feels the loss the greatest and the most. Not some guy who's hired to take care of them. You see, a hireling, if he's out there and he's doing his job and he's a hired hand, he goes out and here comes something that threatens his life. All of a sudden, whoa, that's just got more serious. I don't know if I'm quite that committed to that. I'm not willing to die for a little bit of wages here. I may lose whatever I was going to get to watch these sheep, but I'll take that over dying as a result of being eaten by something in the wilderness. You see, so being a shepherd means having a tremendous amount of value and seeing a love, if you will, for the animals that you have. Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd. I see the sheep as valuable enough that I'm willing to lay down my life for them. There's not that many people that will do that. And Jesus draws that comparison. You see, there's not that many people who are willing to die for years. There's not many opportunities, if you will, that you're going to run into that people are willing to sacrifice themselves just for you, because they don't love you like Jesus does, because they don't see the value in you like Jesus does. You know, we often will say that we're willing to die for certain people. I would die for my children. I would give up my life for them. I would. But I'm going to tell you a personal story, and I hope this doesn't offend anybody. So Amy and I may have told some folks this. Amy and I were on vacation, and we were in Destin, Florida a few weeks ago. We're on a boat, and this man and his daughter were in distress out on the water. And they got pulled out further than they wanted to go. And I can swim. I'm not saying I can save other people, but I can swim. And so me and another couple of folks, we went out to the edge of the sandbar, and I think I got there about the time as they did, and we're on the edge of the sandbar, water's about chest deep, and the waves are breaking right there at that sandbar, hitting me in the face, and knocked my hat off, and all this other stuff, and I'm standing there, and I'm trying to, and this girl and her now unconscious father are a few yards away from me, and I can see him, we're yelling at him, trying to get him back to us. And I'm still on that sandbar, and I thought to myself, I could go out there, I could swim out there. But you know what I also thought? If I go out there and they pull me down, I got a wife and two kids at home. I'm not going to put myself at risk for them. Does that make me a coward? Maybe so. It also makes me not want to put somebody else at risk pulling my dead carcass up out of the water. I'm a big guy. I float pretty good though. But I thought to myself, I'm not willing to give up the livelihood that my children have for this guy, for this person. I didn't know him. So when I say that there are not that many people who are willing to give up everything they have for you, it's true. Jesus Christ lived in heaven with his Father in unending bliss and happiness and joy, and left it because he, like the good shepherd, saw the value in you. You see, he's not like the hired hand. Look with me, if you would, in Luke chapter 15. We pulled the guy in eventually. We were able to do it in a fairly safe manner. He didn't survive. His daughter did. That's the end of that story. But I tell that not just to make you think about it, of who's willing to risk themselves, who's willing to die themselves. And to add to that, Jesus, of course, didn't do that thinking he might die. He didn't put himself at risk to do it. He knew he would. He knew what would happen, and he did it for me, and he did it for you. That's the kind of man that Jesus is. If you want to know what he's like, he's not like little Bo Peep. He's not just one who's there when it's easy and when it's fun and when the weather's nice, when things are going well. He does it even when it's difficult. Luke chapter 15 and verse 3. So he told them a parable. This is Jesus speaking to the tax collectors and sinners, the Pharisees that are questioning why he's eating with tax collectors and sinners. He says, so he told them a parable. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost. Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. He's trying to teach a lesson to those that are there about how valuable you are to Christ. How important you are as a sheep to the shepherd. And that's a pretty big thing for us to understand. Because sometimes to us, we tend to think of Jesus in terms of the good shepherd, and he comforts me, and he does those things, and he does. But the shepherding he does is not just that easy stuff. You see, when we go and we wander away from him, and we talked about this in the class today, in the adult class, when we rebel against him, when we go our own way, when we make things difficult, we're making it difficult for him. Maybe fun for us. We may enjoy it. We may not necessarily see the consequences immediately of it. But we are making it difficult for him to be a good shepherd. We are making his life job more complicated. That way. If you raised cattle, it's amazing how much personality they have, right? And if you've ever watched a calf get their neck stuck in a gate, right? So most fences are barbed wire, so they've got some flexibility, and it's pretty rare that they get tangled up in one of those. But gates, typically, a galvanized steel gate with pipe on it, will have a space about like this. And there's always one dumb calf that will get their neck stuck through that gate. Anybody who's ever raised cattle probably has seen that. But you know what's interesting? It's usually the same one who does it more than once. I want you to imagine for a minute that you are a sheep and you are out living your life and Jesus cares so much about you and you're wandering away back into the same problems you've had before, the same mess, the same sins over and over again. You see, when we think about Jesus as the good shepherd, one of the things that we can do for him is to be an easy sheep to be shepherded, because we love him, because we see the value that we have in his eyes. Also, sometimes we tend to think of ourselves as worthless or useless or downtrodden or weak, or we fail, or we do all things. Good shepherd, like, look at us and say, well, all right, I guess he's gone. He looks at us, unlike a hireling who, hey, it's difficult, I'm not going to go down that road. He says, oh, here I am. I really wish I could find him. I really wish he would come back. And Jesus goes out and does what he can do to bring us back. You see, Jesus is the good shepherd. It's the moral shepherd, good in that sense. He's the good shepherd and he knows what he's doing. But we have to follow him. We have to listen to him. And then finally, he compares himself to the Father. Let's read in verse 14. This is John chapter 10. John chapter 10. Verse 13, he flees, the hired hand flees because he cares nothing for the sheep. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. We'll skip verse 16. We'll come back there in just a second. Verse 17. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down. I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. See, Jesus compares himself to the thief. He compares himself as the good shepherd to the hireling or the hired hand. And then he puts himself in perspective of the relationship with his Father. And as he does this, his whole concept is driven by the fact that he's doing what he's doing because the Father loves him and because he does not want to disappoint his Father. We have this idea sometimes as young people, and I'm old enough that I can say that y'all young people now, say us anymore. But we have this idea as young people sometimes that our parents aren't entitled to want something for us or want the best for us, or they don't know what they're talking about, or they don't know what our situation is or how different it is now than when they were children, or whatever it may be. And that may be to a certain degree true. I'm not going to argue the merits of that. But Jesus looks at his Father, and his most significant thing in life as he walks this earth and talks to these people is that he does the will of his Father, that his Father is proud of him for the job that he's doing, for the work that he's doing. And so every time Jesus talks about what he's doing, laying down his life, what he's doing in guarding the sheep, what he's doing is being the door to guard them from being assaulted or persecuted, when he says, I am these things, he says it all in the context of doing what his Father has asked him to do. And when we look at that, to me, that's a very impressive thing. He talks about the idea that he is laying down his life. He is doing this willingly. It's not something that that's being done by compulsion. And he talks about this in chapter 26, verses 47 through 54. We won't read it for the sake of time. But Jesus is there, and he is taken captive as he goes then to the cross. He's taken there in the garden. He's taken to be crucified. And he makes this very simple statement. He says, I could right now call for 10,000 angels to deliver me from this. I could pray to my Father for that. And he goes and he does this out of a love for his Father, not because he's forced into it, not because he's stuck between a rock and a hard place, not because he's got no other options, got no other choices, but because he willingly loves his Father and he wants to do what his Father wants him to do, and he wants to do what is best for the sheep because of his love for them. He lays himself down for them. And to me, there is so much to be said about that mentality, because we tend to think of ourselves, I believe, sometimes in terms of my desire and what I like and what I want and what I think and what's best for me. We tend to think about things in those terms. And Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, and he puts it in the terms of because that's what my Father expects of me. So when we live our lives, does that enter into our minds? Do we think of Jesus as this man doing what his Father wanted him to do? Or do we think of him in terms of us, that he's doing what he wants to do? Because it's what he wants to do. You see, Jesus did it because his Father, he did what he did because his Father wanted him to do it and because he loved you and me. So when I do the things that I do, why do I do them? Do I do them because it's what I want to do, or do I do them because it's what my Father wants me to do and because it's best for his sheep? That's the question. That's the image, if you will, of the shepherd. You see, being a shepherd is easy when the weather's nice, there's plenty of grass, plenty of rain. Being a shepherd is not so easy when the grass is low, the rain hasn't been in a while, it's the middle of the night, and you get to go fight off a mountain lion with a stick. Right? Miles and miles from civilization. That's when it's difficult. And what drives him on is his love and his desire for his Father's love. So let's look at verse 16, though. I want to look at that one real quick. Verse 16, in conclusion. It says, I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock and one shepherd. This is a very interesting phrase, it says, and I remember as a young person watching on the television in the middle of the day, there was an advertisement for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and they would highlight on there, where they're talking about the Book of Mormon, other sheep that would hear my voice. They would highlight that. And they would say that, you know, that there's other sheep, and their take on it is that there were people in North America, and they heard from Jesus after, and I'm not going to get into all that. Suffice it to say, that's not what he's talking about here. What he is saying is that the flock is not fixed in size. That the flock is not just the people who are listening to me right now. You see, what I find very interesting is Jesus, when he says there are other sheep that will hear my voice, he's talking about me today. He's talking about those of us who were not alive at that time. He's talking about those of us who would hear his voice and follow him. Up in the earlier parts of the passage, he talks about the idea of the sheep hear their master's voice, so they know it and they heed it and they follow it. And he says, there's others that are going to hear this message. And the result is going to be that they're going to follow me. One shepherd and one fold. I want you to imagine for just a minute, or think about for just a minute, that when Jesus said those words, you, whatever your name is, you were in that plan. You and me were this other fold, that I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. And so there will be one flock and one shepherd. That invitation is open to me and is open to you. I find that very interesting. Then all those many years ago, before Ryan's great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy was alive, or grandmother, God looked at this earth and saw that there was going to be a lot of people like me, and there was going to be a me eventually. It took society a while to get around to getting to me. But he saw that there was going to be a me, and he saw that there was this great need, this great love that he had. Drove him to see the needs of the flock. That there were going to be people who rebelled against him. Those who knew better and didn't do what they were supposed to do as followers of him. Those who would live their whole lives thinking that they had it all figured out, but really they had been fed a lie and to believe something that was deceitful. He knew that there was going to be a lot of people who wanted to do their own thing and didn't want to submit to authority. He knew that there were a lot of people who would be drawn away and enticed by their own desires. He knew about all of that. And he laid down his life for us anyway. He laid down his life for you anyway. And all he asks of you is that you hear his voice and that you follow him. So this morning, if you're not following Christ, if you haven't put him on in baptism, if you haven't submitted to him and become a part of his flock and followed the one shepherd, maybe you followed somebody who wears neat tennis shoes. Maybe you followed somebody who has taught you a message so that they can take advantage of you. Maybe you have followed somebody who seems to care about you, but when times get really tough, maybe they'll leave. How about you try following the one that loves you? The one who willingly gave his life for you. The one who sees tremendous value in you as a person and as a soul. If you'd like to make the decision to do that, please let your need be known as we stand and as we sing.